Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to another week of Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. I'm LJ. Tweety is at an event right now. He may or may not be in today, but we're going to keep pushing forward with the show. Lot of interesting stuff again this week to cover since we last talked to you guys last Sunday. As I was watching the game last night, an NBA game, the Cavs versus the Bucks. I don't know if you watch a lot of NBA. LeBron James, shorts getting a little bit on the small side. I mean, he's taking it back to some John Stockton-like type stuff. So I was searching on the internet because, you know, it's kind of the first game I noticed it last night. And I know at one point when Jordan was in the NBA, one particular game, his jersey infamously came up missing. I think that was the one game in the NBA he's wore a number besides 23 or 45. He ended up wearing number 12 of that game. So I thought maybe, you know, LeBron James, his shorts got stolen or something like that. Come to find out, it's deeper than rap. So I searched on the internet last night. Come to find out, a reporter, forget which, who he or she writes for. But anyways, LeBron James wears his jersey tighter and wears his shorts shorter this season, apparently because he wants to give a more professional appearance by wearing shorter shorts and wearing his jersey tighter, which I think that's ridiculous. It doesn't even really make sense to me. I'm not really sure how showing your undergarments, because you can see his tights or whatever you want to call them, that a lot of professional athletes wear under their uniform. You can see those coming from his shorts when he's standing straight up. I don't really think showing your underwear or your undergarments is more professional than wearing shorts that are a little bit longer. I do think that his shorts, when he first came into the NBA, if you go search some pictures from his first few years in the NBA, I mean, his shorts were kind of ridiculous. They were, like, super baggy, super long. But now, in my opinion, they're too short, and I don't think he's looking any more professional now than he did last year. Actually, I think that with his shorts a little bit longer, the look is just cleaner to me than wearing, like, these super small shorts. I kind of think he actually looks a little ridiculous, but, you know, this is me. Just an observance, you know, something I came up with, I caught on to last night. Ronda Rousey, another little quick hit that is in the news heavy, and I mean heavy, overnight. If you don't know who Ronda Rousey is, she's a female UFC fighter. I believe before last night she was 11-0. She had won 9 of her 11 fights by submission, and I wanted, you know, so she's just been great. You know, they're calling her not a once in a generation or just the best current female UFC fighter. They were talking about, like, she is like a once in a, you know, she's like a Michael Jordan of female UFC fighting. Even got into a whole lot of static, you know, between her last fight when she beat a female fighter who was really good but had a little bit of the female fighter she fought against the last fight, had some controversy with steroids and all that kind of stuff. She had just gotten, like, a lot – her fame had just kind of blown up. You know, she – late-night talk shows, movies. She was in whatever the latest Fast and the Furious movie is, what is 7, 8, whatever it was. She was in that movie. You know, she's just gotten a lot more famous. She's been going back and forth for a few months with Floyd Mayweather. You know, said Floyd, you know, obviously Floyd Mayweather was convicted at one point of domestic violence. She had something to say about that. She said that she could beat Floyd Mayweather, I guess, in some sort of match, whether, you know. So she's just been in the news a lot for stuff outside of just fighting. So she had a fight last night against a lady by the name of, UFC fighter by the name of Holly Holm. This lady is apparently a big-time boxer. As far as women boxing goes, really good. And I think a lot of people over the time between Rousey's last fight and between this fight, a lot of people have felt like she's gotten very arrogant. If you Google Ronda Rousey memes, you'll see a lot of, from what I saw earlier today, I saw a lot of memes about, you know, her being humbled and, you know, just her perceived arrogance over from between the last fight and this fight. And I would agree with that. I think she's become more arrogant. I actually was a fan of hers, but I just felt she had gotten so cocky and so, you know, like, over the top because she had been beating everybody that she, to me, became – being a fan of her became a little something I was no longer interested in. I never paid for her fights anyway. Anyway, long story short, she got deboed last night. She got deboed last night. She got her ass not just knocked out, but she got her ass whooped. I mean, there ain't no, you know, you can't really, ain't no really other way to put it. She got her ass whooped last night. I mean, Holly Holm knocked her down out with a spinning, I think it was a spinning kick. I can't remember. It was a kick to the neck area, knocked her down, then, you know, got on the quick one or two punches, the referee called the fight. I mean, she, and if you just watch, I didn't see the whole fight. I saw some highlight stuff like that, but, and I'm sure there's links out there on YouTube or whatever for you to watch it, whatever. But if you watch the fight, she was tagging Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey did an interview with Jimmy Fallon not too long ago, the last month and a half, I think. And basically what she said that Holly Holm was going to try to do to her, which was keep her distance and try to catch her with a kick to the head. It was exactly what happened. I mean, she wore out, whooped her ass. Maybe Ronda Rousey got a little bit of, maybe she got a slice of humble pie. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be a rematch. I think the sad part about this is instead of the talk being about how well Holly Holm performed, it's about how bad Ronda Rousey lost. You know, because of the disparity in fame between Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey, the narrative is not Holly Holm dominated, it's Ronda Rousey lost. That's what everybody's focused on, as opposed to giving Holly Holm. I'm not saying she's not getting credit for winning, because obviously she won, but it's more about Ronda Rousey losing and getting knocked out, et cetera, et cetera. So, interesting fight. I'm not really a UFC. I mean, I like UFC, I should say. I don't really pay for the fights because sometimes they suck. They're boring. And then also in the fighting world, this is coming up Saturday on the 21st, a fight that I'm actually looking forward to, Canelo Alvarez and Miguel Cotto. Pay-per-view. I'm not sure if I'm going to pay for it or not. I don't know if I'll watch it. I probably will. I'm on the East Coast. Pay-per-view fights, you know, by the time you get through all the undercards, pay-per-view fights doesn't come on until like 1 o'clock in the morning, the actual main event. 9 times out of 10, I'll probably be asleep during that time, but I'm going to try to stay up and pay for it and watch it. I think it's going to be a great fight. If you've seen either one of these guys fight, you know that they're both exciting. They punch a lot, very hard punches. Both of them have knockout power. I think if they fight how they fought in past matches, I think it's going to be a great fight. Canelo Alvarez has only lost once when he got absolutely destroyed by Floyd Mayweather. I forget how many times Miguel Cotto lost. I think it's like 3 or 4 times. He was doing great until he fought Antonio Margarita. Margarita beat the hell out of him. I mean, it was a nasty, nasty, bloody fight because Margarita absolutely beat the hell out of him. And come to find out later, Margarita had his hands were illegally wrapped or something like that. Miguel Cotto wasn't the same after a few fights. Then he linked up with Freddie Roach, and, he Stella got a groove back, basically. And he's been knocking boys down since he got back with Freddie Roach. Been fighting a lot better. So I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. I think it's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully, I will make the judgment call that I'll be able to stay up late enough and actually watch the fight and not fall asleep. If you want to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 646-668-2343. Again, that number is 646-668-3343. And let's move on to some college football news, to some college football, interesting weekend in college football. First of all, I think I've spoken over the last couple weeks about how ridiculous I think the college football playoff system is. I think it's stupid, but whatever. It's not my call, just my opinion. You had a few teams that were ranked in that top 10, top 15 area that lost. Baylor lost this weekend to Oklahoma. Stanford lost. Who else lost? Now those are the two more noteworthy teams that were of higher rank that lost this weekend. Ohio State, Clemson had a close game. I don't want to say close. They only won by 10 over Syracuse. Syracuse is not very good. Ohio State still, they just can't get right. Just can't get right. Even with JT Barrett back at quarterback, they won, but they didn't just blow away. I forget who they played this weekend, but they didn't just blow them away. They didn't want 28-3 or something like that. But 23, they played Illinois. It wasn't quite a blowout. Oklahoma State took care of business. They had a tough one. It went down to the wire against Iowa State, but actually they moved up into the top five of one of just the ranking polls and not the actual college football playoff system. The thing that I find most interesting about the college football playoff system is if you listen to the show last week, what I talked about last week was how I think that being in the SEC inflates, will allow a team like Alabama, who when you have multiple teams who still were undefeated, such as Baylor, Ohio State, they didn't jump Ohio State, but Baylor and TCU to be exact, you would have a team like Alabama last, when the first college football playoff poll came out, or rankings, I should say, when they came out, a one-loss Alabama team vaulted those two teams into the top four. And I said last week that I felt like that was because people being the media tend to overrate SEC teams, and therefore when you start off at the beginning of the season, you have six SEC teams ranked in the top 25. So therefore, as the season progresses, if you're in the SEC, it looks like you play a really tough schedule because you have all these teams that were ranked in the beginning of the preseason. And what tends to happen is most of those teams start losing, whether they lose to themselves, lose within the conference or outside the conference. Most of them start to lose, and they, pile up three, four losses. Now the season goes on, they look more and more overrated. So Alabama at this point, when the first college football poll came, college football playoff rankings came out, vaulted into the top four because it looked like their schedule was really strong based on preseason rankings. And, if you start out in the top 15, even if you lose the first game, you're probably, unless you just get destroyed, you're probably still going to be in the top 25 for another few weeks. Right? So it looked like their schedule was really strong. So they that helped vault them into the top four position with one loss, even though I said, you had two other teams who were undefeated. Now, what I wonder is, are they going to use that same thought process as far as, those teams, SEC teams that are highly ranked are now starting to lose. So now does that have a negative impact on Alabama? Because if you have paid attention, Notre Dame, I think they were number four in this poll, or they're somewhere, they're pretty high in the top five or six. They're also a one-loss team. Now, Notre Dame did win this weekend, but two teams that they had beaten that were top-notch teams lost this weekend. Stanford lost to Oregon, and Temple lost this weekend also. That's probably going to have an effect on Notre Dame's resume as far as the college football playoff rankings go. Now, will that have the same effect on Alabama? First of all, Ole Miss is not a very good team. And I don't care what anybody says. I've seen Ole Miss play about three games. That quarterback, Chad Kelly, he's not very good. He's okay. very, 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 very inconsistent player. He's got some tools, but he's a very inconsistent quarterback. I just don't think Ole Miss is that good of a team. But they fell out of the top 25, had some ugly losses, and now they're, depending on which poll you look at, they're either right at the bottom of the top 25 or they're out. LSU lost two games in a row. Two games in a row. They got destroyed by Alabama, and then they lost to an unranked, pretty easily as a matter of fact, lost to an unranked Arkansas team last night. So when they played LSU, when they play Alabama, they're ranked number two. This week they're ranked number nine when they lost to Arkansas. So they're just going to continue to tumble. They'll probably still be ranked in the top 25. But it'll be interesting to see what this poll looks like coming out Tuesday evening. The other thing is that TCU is a one-loss team now. TCU is a one-loss team now. But they lost their best player, Trayvon Boykin. And I think they're going to be penalized from they don't necessarily – I haven't seen anything reported about the severity of his ankle injury, but if it's severe enough where he's got to miss a couple of games, I mean, the TCU's already 10 games into the season. Most teams have one, maybe two games, three if you make it to your conference championship game left. If he's out for the rest of the season, TCU's season, in my opinion, is over. They have no shot at the college football playoff for the simple fact that he accounts for so much of their offense, they can't make it up. And it's not just a simple passing play. And I think this is where a lot of people – this is where you have to understand what you get from having a great player like a Trayvon Boykin in your system. He makes plays that other people can't make. He's not necessarily the best passer, but what he brings is in his intangibles as far as scrambling, keeping plays alive, making big plays with the legs, making teams have to prepare for not only that run threat, but also that pass threat. He's a willing runner, and he is a really, really, really good runner, and he's definitely more than capable as a passer, so he's definitely a dual threat and good enough at both to where he can beat you with his arm, but he also is good enough. Excuse me, he can beat you with his legs, but he's also good enough that he can beat you with his arm. So I don't think TCU would be able to replace his production. And also, they just lost their best receiver last week to an injury. I believe he's out for the season, Doxson. So you lose arguably your two best players on a team. You know, it's hard for teams to recover from that at any level. So. Basically, when the polls come out this week, I think Clemson will be there. I think Alabama, obviously. I wouldn't be surprised if they put Alabama number one, but I doubt that's going to happen because I don't think they're going to be able to jump Clemson. I think it'll be Clemson one, Alabama two. I think Ohio State is probably going to be fourth. And I actually think either Oklahoma State or Iowa will move into that fourth slot. So those will be my four teams that I think are going to be in the top four of the college football playoff rankings when they come out on Tuesday. I think Notre Dame is going to be a little bit I think Notre Dame is going to be just a little bit outside of that, and they will make it. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's what I think how I think is going to shake out. Heisman, we're getting close to the end of the season. Heisman front runner right now, I think it's Derrick Henry, the running back from Alabama. I think it's his trophy to lose right now. I think Leonard Fournette, unless LSU somehow comes back and makes something miraculous happens where they make it to the SEC championship game and they win, I don't think he's going to win it. It's Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's trophy to lose. Head-to-head against Leonard Fournette, he played way better. And you can talk about who's got the better players at this position, whatever. Bottom line is people are going to look at the individual production. He outplayed him. He had 200-plus rushing yards against LSU, whereas Fournette had less than 70 in the game against Alabama. Also, Derrick Henry had another 200-yard two-touchdown rushing game this past season So I think it's Derrick. I think it's Derrick Henry's race, Heisman Trophy to win. I don't particularly care who comes in second place, because if you're not first, then you're last, and nobody really. I don't really care who comes in second, as long as this kid is not injured, and Alabama continues to win out. He's going to win the Heisman Trophy. I don't think it's going to be even a. I think he, you know, he made Fournette. He's going to lose some votes to Fournette, just because of the great season that Fournette has had, and the way people view Fournette as a once in a generation type running back. He'll lose some votes just because of that. But I still think he'll win it, and I think he'll win it. I think he'll win it pretty easily, because he just had a monster season. Scored at least one touchdown in every game. Is averaging, well, as of the game yesterday, he's averaging about 140 yards per game, and that's gone up, obviously, because he rushed for over 200 yards yesterday. So I think the Heisman race is all but signed, sealed, and all but signed, sealed, and delivered for Derrick Henry. Moving on to the NBA. Basketball is by far my favorite sport. And to watch, by far my favorite sport to play, and by far my favorite sport to talk about. An interesting debate going on right now. If you watch these first, most teams have played about 10 games. Some have played maybe one or two more. About 2 weeks of the NBA season, one common thread, Steph Curry is just lighting the NBA up. He's averaging 30-plus points. I mean, he is absolutely dominating right now. And the narrative or the question that's being thrown around out there is Steph Curry the best player in the NBA right now? The best player, you know, with guys out there like Anthony Davis still out there, DeMarcus Cousins, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. You know, the list goes on. Well, I mean, that's probably your top five or six players in the NBA right now, so we won't go beyond that. But the thing that I find the most interesting is prior to last season when Kevin Durant got injured, there was no question among anybody or very few people that Kevin Durant was the second best player in the NBA. A lot of people say Anthony Davis is probably third and was creeping up. But there's very few people who doubted or would have even thought to say that Kevin Durant wasn't the second best player in the NBA. Now, Kevin Durant hasn't really done anything wrong. He hasn't taken a step backwards or anything. He just didn't play last year. Out of sight, out of mind. So, and then the Warriors won last year. Steph Curry played great. He had some big-time games last year. But Kevin Durant, and you know, he's kind of like not even really mentioned right now, which I find very interesting. But is Steph Curry the best player in the NBA right now? The reason I think it's so hard for people to say a guy who's not 6'8", 6'9", or above, to say that person, or even 6'6", to say that person is the best player in the league, is because of the ways in which they can affect the game. So Steph Curry is obviously an incredible shooter. I mean, you got to start guarding him almost as soon as he comes across the court, pretty much, because he can shoot the three from 32 feet, shooting 40-50%. I mean, he's proven it. That's not made up. You know, he's proven he can shoot off the dribble. He can pass the ball. He's actually a decent rebounder for his size. He normally averages about 5 rebounds a game, but he's not 6'8", 6'6". You know, there's not a lot of big-time scoring point guards in the NBA. He's not a dominant defender. So you're not going to take a 6'3", Steph Curry and put him on a 6'6" shooting guard who's having a great game, or be able to put him on a 6'4" guy, 6'7" guy who's having a great game. Because as a 6'3" guy, he doesn't have that defensive versatility that a 6'6 or above, or even 6'5 guy and above, a lot of them give you. You know, you can't build a defensive game plan around having Steph Curry as your anchor, and it's not necessarily because he's not a great defensive player, because even though he's not, but even if a 6'3 guy were a great defensive player like a Tony Allen, he's a 6'4 actually, but you don't build your defensive game plan around a guard, because as a guard, he's not going to be able to erase the mistakes of other players because he can't protect the rim. He can't guard three or four different positions because of his size alone. He may be able to guard two. You know, if the two guard is not very good, not a very good scoring option or whatever. But I think that's the biggest thing that's going against Steph Curry, just his height, because most of the times when people say who's the best player in the NBA, it's always guys that are 6'5", 6'6", and above. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan. You know, you just go back, you backtrack the years. But as far as these first 10 games are going in the NBA, I would say nobody's playing any better than Steph Curry is right now. I think Anthony Davis may have been, because of the way the Pelicans have started, some people are kind of a little bit cooled on him. He's a little bit cooled. But you take the fact that Steph Curry's having 30-plus points, his shooting percentage is incredible. The Warriors are 10-0, not to mention the fact that they're 10-0 with their head coach not there. You know, Luke Walton, he's not very far removed from being a player in the NBA. So he doesn't even have a lot of coaching experience. He's probably only been out of the NBA for a few years as far as being a player, no more than three or four years at max, and he's dropped right into the head coaching role. They're still 10-0, and it's really just because Steph Curry's been playing, like, so amazing. He's had two 40-plus point games already this season in the first 10 games. He's had at least two quarters that I remember off the top of my head where he scored 20-plus points in one quarter. I mean, he is just having an incredible season. So right now, I would say, based on the way the season has started right now, he's probably the best player in the NBA. Now, you know, a guy like Russell Westbrook has played amazing too. He's already had two triple-doubles, did a triple-double the other day. He's playing great now, especially with, he can do a little bit more offensively because Durant is injured. He pulled his hamstring earlier this week. So Durant is out. But I think right now Steph Curry is probably the best player in the NBA. I don't think most people would take him to build their franchise around, again, because he's a guard. He's only 6'3". If he were a bigger guy, I think there would be more people. But I think right now most people would probably take either Durant or Anthony Davis simply because of size alone. But very interesting topic, something to keep an eye on as the season goes. I know if he plays like this the rest of the year, there's no reason he won't win his second MVP, and it won't even be close. Because in my opinion, there's nobody even though I think Russell Westbrook is playing really good or better than really good, he's playing great right now. I don't really think there's anybody who's playing that close to the level Steph Curry is playing on right now. I got a name. We're running out of time right now, so I want to get to a little piece that I call "Who's Moving." Or view it, or looking at moving to Washed Island. Washed Island is where professional athletes and maybe even some entertainers, who knows, go when they washed up. So we got Reggie Bush over there. Reggie Bush injured himself, I think it was last week, the week before, out for the season. Reggie Bush is officially washed, already on Washed Island. All y'all Lakers fans out there, y'all know who next. Your boy Kobe. Kobe Bryant asked on bought him a plane ticket to Washed Island. He ain't quite there yet, but he damn sure got a pin on his calendar when he's going to be on Washed Island. Earl Ball and Lay, I mean, Kobe just looked bad compared to the Kobe we all are used to seeing over the years. He didn't age gracefully right now. He looked like crap. There's no way around it. But anyway, we're running out of time, folks. Thank y'all again for tuning in. Please, please, please go to blogtalkradio.com and listen to the show. Tell your friends about it, coworkers, whoever you can. Listen, listen, listen. Tune in again, same time next week, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central Time. talk that talk with Tweety and LJ. Peace.